Okay, good evening, everybody, and I'm welcome to tonight's colloquia on Bias Busters 100 Questions About Cultural Diversity with Answers. I am Hui Hua Chua, the MSU Library's liaison to the MSU School of Journalism, and I'm delighted to welcome you to this event. Tonight's event is co-sponsored by the MSU Office for Inclusion and Intercultural Initiatives, the MSU School of Journalism, and MSU Library's Diversity Committee, and as part of the campus-wide project 6050 event series. So we'll be kicking off with a panel discussion with Joe Grimm from the School of Journalism and current and former students from his Journalism 492 class. You will then get a chance to participate in some questions and quizzes and some discussions after that. Joe Grimm teaches in the School of Journalism and is editor of the Bias Busters series, which began in 2013. His class is now producing the seventh guide in the series on Muslim Americans, and a guide to Jewish Americans will be produced next semester. Joe came to Michigan State in 2008 from the Detroit Free Press, where he worked for more than 25 years. For most of his time there, he was the newsroom recruiter and focused on diversity in the newsroom. He was too modest to send this information to me when he sent this bio, but he has also won numerous awards for diversity from various journalism groups as well. So, Joe.
Thank you, Weewa, and thank the library staff that worked hard to put this together and coached me and encouraged me to do this, and to our sponsors, of course. I'm not going to say much. Weewa said some of the things I want to say, which were very few. I'm going to sort of be directing things, but I would like to introduce our distinguished panelists and let them tell you what they've been doing. To my left, your right, Marinda Valley, Kate Kerbrett, Kyle Kohler, and Leah Kamana. And they're each going to take turns telling you a little bit about how this program works. As Weewa said, we've been going since the beginning of last year. We've published six guides so far, seventh one soon. Marinda?
Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming. My name is Marinda Valley, as Joe mentioned, and I'm a senior and a journalism major here at MSU. And part of the reason that I've been studying journalism for the past 3 years is because I strongly believe in the tenets of the profession. I think that journalism, more than any other medium or source of information, really has the power to connect individuals from different communities, different countries, and different cultures. And I think that's exactly what we did with this guide. It's definitely what we intended to do. And I worked specifically on the guide about Americans. So that's this one right here. And although it was about Americans, it was actually designed to aid international students. So it answers questions about American culture and different things pertaining to the United States. But it is really supposed to be a stepping stone for students who are coming to the United States from abroad and helping them to adjust to the culture. So the way that we set out in creating this guide was to first identify international students, so that's just where one of our journalistic skills comes into play. Of course, you don't want to ever assume that someone is an international student, but we, again, just used our journalistic skills there and reached out to a lot of different people. But when we spoke with the international students, we asked them about what they were confused about American culture when they first came here, what they would have liked to share with their former selves before arriving here for school, and even what things they still misunderstand about culture or American ways of life now. And from their answers, we developed a lot of the questions for our guide, but we also read between the lines from their responses. So sometimes they wouldn't blatantly say something, or that, you know, they wouldn't ask us a question specifically, but we could determine from a lot of the different themes and things that were coming up that they were curious about a certain aspect, again, of American culture or things that we do here in the United States. And after we gathered all of our interviews, we came together as a class and talked about a lot of these things, and that's where we came up with those different questions. And after that, it was a lot of editing. We whittled down, I don't know, hundreds of questions and came up with our solid 100. And from there on, the research began, and we consulted different sources, which I believe some of the other panelists tonight will speak about. And And through all of that, I definitely learned a lot about American culture myself, and really the idea that culture is something we all take for granted. And one question that we like to bring out from the book is, what is included in the date? I think that is really representative of the project that we're trying to do here, because, you know, if you're an American student, if you're used to dating culture, you are pretty familiar with that, what that entails and what that doesn't entail. But that's just a small thing that could easily be misconstrued or misunderstood. So I think that represents, in a small way, what we're trying to do here is give people a safe zone to ask those questions, and hopefully if they get some of those basic things answered, they can move on to deeper questions and really get to know each other and cross those cultural barriers that might exist.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kate. I'm a comparative cultures and politics and journalism senior. I'm currently working on the 100 Questions and Answers About Muslim American book, so it's still in process. It's a little bit difficult to, first start doing this book because you have to find people first to talk to, and we're doing the book about Muslims again, so you can't exactly just, go up to anybody on the street who's wearing hijab, for example, and be like, hey, can I talk to you? Because that's kind of awkward and presumptuous, like she was saying. So a lot of us were having to go to, club events and going to, international fairs, everything that we could to reach out to as many people who were willing to talk to us as possible. And I think we each talked to at least 3 or 4 people, a minimum. And just, at least in my experience, I talked to, some people for hours just about, what are your experiences? What are the things, some of the things that you've gone through? And it can be kind of hard doing that as a journalist, because you have to, expose the fact that you don't know everything and that you're kind of ignorant, and, you don't want to insult somebody, but at the same time, you want to know the answer to the questions. And so there was one person I talked to named Fatim. She was from Malaysia, and a majority of the world's Muslim population is actually from Southeast Asia, so she was kind of vindictive of most Muslims. And then she was just saying how she was really shocked being in America, because coming from Malaysia, she had heard that we hate Muslims, we're evil, not evil ourselves, but, just awful to Muslim people, and that, all we do is, make their lives miserable. And she was shocked at how kind people here were to her. So that was really interesting to me as a journalist, because, I'm really into inclusion. That's why I'm also in James Madison. And so it was kind of sad that she had all these preconceptions. But she was telling me how much she loved it here. She was telling me, how she still found it really easy to practice her faith, and we had a really great conversation. And some of the main things that she wanted me to know to make sure that other people knew through this book were that not all Muslims are terrorists, even though that's with how the media presents them. She chose to wear hijab. She was not forced into it. She was not going to be forced into a marriage with somebody. That not all Muslims hate America. Not all Muslims hate Christians or Jews. That they most of them just believe in peacefully living out their lives like the rest of us hope to. And that she really just could not stand the Islamophobia that the media at least presents. And so that's why I think it's really important that we're doing this guide, because it's helping to take away that Islamophobia and actually bring knowledge into the field.
Hi, my name's Kyle Kohler. I'm a junior at here, obviously. But I'm double majoring in journalism and Spanish. And so when we put these guides together, we try to follow 4 basic principles, and those are respect, accuracy, authority, and accessibility. And so what respect means is that we respect the people we write about as well as the people that ask the questions. We believe that all questions are worth asking, and we assume sincerity on the part of the people who ask those questions. So we assume that they're genuinely curious about what they're asking, and not that they're asking this just for fun. And when we answer the questions, we try to be as real as possible, and we ask the questions like people ask them. However, when we do write the questions, we omit any derogative slurs or comments. And for accuracy, so when doing research, we rely on the guidance of multiple experts, and we choose to use nonpartisan research sources. And what that means is websites and agencies that aren't pro-Islam or anti-Islam or anything, they're just neutral. And some examples are like the Census Bureau, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the World Factbook, State Department, the Pew Research Center. And so we try to avoid overloading people with too many numbers when we answer these, but we do like to put in facts, especially for comparison. And we try to avoid using like Wikipedia as a source for information, since you know not all that's reliable. We stray away from advocacy websites, and because some websites, even though they may look legit and everything, have really Islamophobic undertones to it. So we had to try and avoid that in getting accurate answers. And we avoid click farms like ask.com and stuff that really don't have sufficient information to answer the questions. And so for authority, this is going back to the experts, and we rely on as many as 20 expert allies to check over our questions and our answers before we publish it. And so for this Muslim guy that we're working on right now, some of them are Mohammed Khalil, who is a law professor here and a religious studies professor, as well as the acting director of the Muslim studies here, Imam Abdul Latif Berry, who works at the Islamic Institute of Dearborn, and Walid Daoud, who works for the Center of American Islamic Relations in Dearborn. And so what these people do is they look over our questions and answers, make sure the information's right, help to guide us, or if something's incomplete or not clear, they'll give us guidance on how to answer it to make it correct. And for accessibility, what that means is we want our guides to be easy to read and understand. We're not going to throw in a lot of jargon that the everyday person's not going to understand. If we bring in a term, we're going to explain what that term is, at least the first time it's mentioned in the guide. And we don't try to avoid complex questions, even though the answer might be really difficult. And one of the ways we do get around this is we break it up, the complex issue, into smaller questions. And one of the biggest complex issues that I personally had to deal with were the regulations for Islamic banking, since Islamic financial institutions have quite a big difference. And it's just a really complex issue.
Hi, everyone. I'm Leah Kamana. I'm a senior journalism student here, and I have a minor in Jewish studies. And the reason I decided to take this class was I actually just returned in August from 9 months abroad in Israel. And so I lived abroad with a wide variety of religious groups. And it was amazing for me to go through this process, having been abroad for 9 months, and realize how much I still didn't know about a group of people that I was immersing myself with for that long of a period of time. Really cool thing about this is we produced these guides in one semester. We met for the first time on September 2nd, and next week these guides are going to the press, or all the printers, I guess I should say. And the main reason we produce these, as we've all kind of touched on, is we want to start conversations amongst people of different groups and help them understand each other in a more positive way. These guides are used by universities, companies, professors, and individuals, and they can be found in universities across the country, such as in California, Illinois, Michigan, and Minnesota. The guides can be purchased, or well, I guess are available, all of them except for the one we're working on now, of course, are available in print and digital on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's and a few other websites. And the fact that they are so accessible has led to overseas sales as far as Japan. This year, we are receiving the guides in November, and they'll be ready for purchase just in time for the holiday season. And I know you all want one, so just a heads up, check out Amazon. But, yeah.
Well, you see why I have to love my students. Very good. Thank you, Marinda, Kate, Kyle, and Leah. Who has a career in telemarketing, I think. what we want to do now is we want to take you into our world, and that is we believe that it is fun to learn about each other, that we all have a lot of questions, that nobody should ever get yelled at for asking a question. We believe that questions come from good hearts, and we will try to answer them, as Kyle described, the kind of respect we show both to the people we write about and the people who are asking the questions. We're trying to make it so that people don't feel so awkward having those next conversations. The idea being, if I know 100 facts about you now, I don't feel that I'm going to really ask a really bad thing because I've got some base to start from. So what we want to do, this is how we're going to go for the next little while. We're going to, as a group, go through 10 questions that come from the guide that Marinda worked on about Americans. These are questions people have about Americans. Then we're going to go into small groups. We have some tables. The library has set up some tables at the back of the room. These chairs are all on wheels, and we want to go down to about, four, five, six people, and in groups start to answer some questions. Those questions come from the guide, 100 Questions and Answers About East Asian Cultures. And I would say that if you're from an East Asian country, spread yourselves around, sit at one of those tables, and be the resource at that table. Really big for us this past year was trying to answer some questions that could make it easier on our campus for people who are from the United States and people who are from Asia to understand each other and make friends faster. That's part of what we wanted to do. We want to have that spirit in this room tonight. After the groups answer the questions, there's 10 of them, we're going to ask the groups to report how they did and score themselves, and we have prizes for winners. Could you show us one of the prizes? Yes, we're going to give away some guides. Kyle, did you say you would do this part where you put up the question? Come on up here. These are from the guide that Marinda worked on, and Kyle's going to show you a question. Then we're going to look for hands. We might decide to give some prizes away during this section too. We might just go totally crazy. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, let me throw books at people.
I'll do that one.
Yeah, this one here. So one click, gets us into there. This is the guide about Americans. So if you're American and have been your whole life, you might think, oh, this is too easy. But you might be surprised at what some people think is unusual. Give us question one, Kyle.
All right. And why do Americans speak English with so many different accents?
There's a hand up.
Oh, I see it.
Because of the different cultures?
Because of different cultures? Other reasons why Americans have... What do you all think?
I would say because it's a big country, and maybe other countries speak with different accents as well because of their size, and you speak about the country you live with.
Does anybody else have an idea? Yes.
Maybe like America is like kind of like a melting pot of different cultures. It's not like the kind of origins comes from like a bunch of cultures coming together. I know there's a microphone.
Should I re-say that?
Re-say that in case somebody...
wow, it's loud. I just think because like America is like a melting pot of so many different cultures as opposed to just being like... It has like... Its history is like other cultures coming together, kind of. I don't know.
Those sounded pretty good to me. What do you think?
All right, so basically all of you guys are right in part. This is the answer that was published in the guide.
We aren't going to read these, but because you can all see that, but we'll just put them up there. So it's not just us, it's the language we speak comes from a lot of different places. Okay. Right, next. Question two.
Why do Americans smile at people for no reason?
Why do we do that?
I think it's because instead of like awkwardly, I don't know, instead of just like saying hello, it's like people just give that like smile and nod to say hello, because you don't know who speaks what language, and you don't want to just be like hi, and then they be like, "What are you saying to me?" Like, so.
Anybody else? Oh, we got a few hands.
Different parts of the world have different ways to meet each other, and it somehow it has got into our mores, our way, folk ways, to greet people with a smile. And that was brought to my attention years ago as a student when the problem came up, or the question came up, it was a teenager's 4-H conference. It was included people from other countries, and some say we look silly because we smile so much, and I as a lifelong American, I don't. Object or think it's strange when someone greets me without a smile, but it's a polite thing to do, to greet people with a smile in this country. Sometimes I think I'm more likely to smile when I'm nervous, but that's another question.
This question, by the way, is not included in the New York edition. Comparatively speaking, the American people are very outgoing. For example, it's different from the British people, but different from the Asians. I think there is such kind of character have its religious source. For example, in a most American mind, they think that they are living in a land promised. Yeah. So God gives them the responsibility to bring something to the world. So smiling at different people, at different strangers, gives them such a sense. Yeah, I can give people happiness, laughter. Yeah, so this is a sense of responsibility. Yeah, we are chosen by God. Another kind of source come from the history of America. Now, we know that America is a huge country, but at first it's not so huge. With this process of expansion, especially the West movement, now American people, such kind of people, as they are expanding to the West side, they needed to overcome a lot of obstacles and difficulties. Now, and such harsh reality, they need to be optimistic, otherwise they can't overcome such loneliness or such crude natural environment. So I think this is a habit comes from history and religion. So that's it. That's my answer, my understanding.
So the answer that got published in the guide was this.
When we interviewed people, we found that people from some countries were very put off by the smiling. They said, in my country, if you smile for no reason, there's going to be a fight. But they learned to adapt.
All right, so the third question is, what are appropriate ways to greet people in America? Anybody?
To shake someone's right hand. Wave. Do the head nod.
Wish them a good day, or like ask them if their day is good.
Well,
Well, let's see. As an American man, we greet people in many different ways. If we have our little brother in the house, it's, what's up, little bro? We throw out the brother handshake, you know. But for the most part, man-to-man greeting should be formally shaking the right hand with a decent amount of pressure. You do not hand someone a fish hand, but you don't give a bone crusher as well. So there's my answer. And peace. I forgot the peace. We throw out the peace sign a lot, you know. How you doing? Drop my phone. Give the head nod on the way up, you know. That's pretty much it. Yeah, absolutely.
I can't tell how this is. I think this is pretty similar to the smile thing. I think Americans want to have the possibility to have a relationship with anybody that they meet, even if they're just being friendly. They see as everybody as like a possible friend. So I think you want to like appropriate the way you greet people in that way. So if I give someone a handshake, it means I possibly want to do business with you. I respect you. I want to open up a relationship where we might be respected. If I hug you, I want to possibly be your friend or maybe be closer with you. If I say, how's it going? Maybe I care about your day or I'm interested in you or your day.
Let's hold a second there with how's it going? How's it going? Came up a lot. Now, how's it going is an appropriate American greeting. But we talk to people from, especially Africa and Asia, who are like, how's it going? Like, what does that mean? Europeans have similar expressions, but Asians and Africans are like, first time I got here, everybody said, how's it going? I don't even know what it is or where it's supposed to be going. So we think we're greeting people, and until they say, oh, that just means hello, they were like, oh, I don't know how to answer that one.
Do you want me to answer that? Or?
Yeah. If I say, how's it going, how do you respond? So, how's it going?
It's going well. How about you?
Cool.
I think the how's it going thing is, again, goes with like the smiling thing. You want to open up a relationship with people. I think Americans are pretty curious and pretty outgoing people, so we want to like have as many friends as possible. I mean, that's my impression of Americans. We generally do care to a point how people are doing, and we want to make sure that people are happy. I think that's my impersonation.
Oh my gosh, I've been trying to get this microphone for the past 30 minutes. But everyone here has a general senses of what the appropriate American way is to greet someone. Generally with myself, I never really ask, how's it going? I always ask, how are you doing? Because it's more general. And when it comes to the handshake, I'm a germaphobe, so I really don't prefer to shake people's hands when I'm greeting them for the first time, unless it's for a business realm. However, when it comes to greeting people that I'm at work or if I'm in class or whatever, I normally say, how are you doing? And if it's someone that's in a closer relationship with me, that's when I would initiate a hug because I'm a hugger. So I think the appropriate way to greet someone is generally hello and how are you doing, so to speak.
And that's what we said was that, hello, how are you? It's nice to meet you. Shaking hands, pretty much everything.
Do I win a prize?
Yeah!
I think everyone deserves a prize.
Wow. Like, we're all the prize here. I'm not going to throw these. They have very sharp. Well, number four.
All right, number four. Why is racism such an issue in America? Oh, we got an answer in the back.
I believe that racism is such an issue in America partially because you have so many different people in different cultures that it's hard to understand why other people do other things, especially if you don't ask them about it. And another reason is because, well, there are so many people who don't believe that it exists. And that creates a problem. So when people are like, hey, this thing you're doing, I don't like it for these reasons, the other people go, oh, well, you're being sensitive and you need to calm down.
I want to call out Devin Lloyd worked on the first guide we did, and I see Max Gunn, who also worked on one of these guides. Bruce came in, Ariel's up here. So there's a few, we're starting to have alumni. Some people were surprised when they came here that we talked about race a lot or that it's in the news a lot. Some people think we talk about it not enough.
I was just going to say that I think, you know, I mean, racism kind of happens everywhere, and I think that the way that America's media is set up, sometimes that takes precedence and gets, like, you know, publicized more than other things, whereas, like, other countries in the world have large-scale things going on, genocides and that type of thing, which is, you could say, is racism for reasons why those are happening sometimes, and I just think I'm not blaming the media, like blaming us, but I'm saying that I feel like, you know, it's one of those things where America does not have these large scale things that might be going on. And I don't know. I hope someone can follow that a little bit. But.
I think part of it, too, is that I mean, so many race issues are very, very recent. Like, civil rights was not that long ago in the grand scheme of things. So it's still on everyone's mind because we have not had time to really, really grow from it.
Does anybody else want to say something? Oh, we got one in the back.
I think racism is an issue everywhere, and I think one reason is because people feel comfortable with people who are like them, and because of that, a lot of us have grown up in a similar cultural environment with people who are the same race as us, and so that makes us less open to other cultures and races and beliefs.
All right, so what was published in the guide was this. It included, like, you know, the history of the slavery. And just, it's a complicated issue, basically. All right, so question number 5 is, when should I tip and how much should I leave?
I think you should always tip. My sister is a server, so I feel strongly that one should always tip, even if the service isn't awesome. So this is just what I do, but I know that I'm an extreme tipper because of my sister. I feel like 20%. You should always do 20%. And if the service was really bad, then you could do like 10. But I often do more than 20%, much to his displeasure, I think. Always breaking the budget with my tipping, I think.
Oh, we got one way in the back.
I think another thing about Americans, just based on a little bit of experience traveling, is that we expect the service that we receive to be a reflection of our tipping and vice versa. Our tipping is a reflection of the quality of the service we receive. I know in other cultures or other countries that don't tip like we do, the service reflects that. So I think that that's another major part of the tipping culture in the U.S. is that it's a reflection of the type of service that we expect and the quality and the pace of the service that we expect.
All right. And then this is what was put into the guide.
Okay. Usually I will leave a 10% or 15%, but if the service is especially good, I will leave 20%. And I learned And I learned this this way to thanks the person who helped me after I come in America. Yeah. Thank you.
Just to let everybody know, gratuity does not exist anymore. So for large parties, as of not this, I think it was this past January, actually, the U.S. passed a law that gratuity doesn't exist. So if you are a large party and you go to a restaurant, please still do tip. That would be very nice.
All right, so question number six is pop soda or Coke?
Maybe we should do a vote.
Thanks.
Oh, how many people say that bubbly sweet beverage is called pop? Raise your hand if it's pop. Okay, now put your hand down. Raise your hand if you call that stuff soda. Oh, okay.
Raise your hand. Go away, Hawaiians.
You said soda pop. You say, well, how many people call it Coke, whatever it is? Oh, okay. Michigan is a pop state. Let's see what that is.
It's really just a regional thing.
Yeah.
Why do children have to do chores?
Because they need marketable life skills.
Training. Home training.
Does anybody else have an idea? Oh, we got one up here. All right, and what we said in the guide is to teach responsibility. And the question number eight is, do Americans drink a lot of coffee?
I think that Americans do drink a lot of coffee, and especially since, like, coming to college even. A lot of college students drink coffee, and it's kind of like I joined the bandwagon on that. But ever since Starbucks even came up, everyone goes there now. And now with all different kinds of flavors, everyone gets addicted, and I don't know if it's prominent anywhere else, but I know here it's huge. There's all different kinds of coffee chains now also, so...
And a little fun fact, 83% of us drink coffee, which is the highest proportion in the world. Why are there so many guns in the United States?
Oh, God, I'm not answering that.
Anybody want to touch this?
I'm going to go straight basic on this.
Okay, basic Second Amendment, right to bear arms, that's all I got to say.
We got another one back here.
Yeah. I agree. The Second Amendment definitely helps initiate the reason why Americans have guns, but it also brings a sense of security in some environments and some households. And it depends on, it doesn't necessarily depend on your occupation, but as far as personal experience, my dad is a police officer, so he has a ton of guns. And then since I'm the only daughter, he has a ton of guns. So it brings a sense of security and, protection, so to speak. So I believe that's why there are so many guns in the U.S., and the Second Amendment helps. And if you have a CCW, you're also in the winning to have a gun. So I believe that's why. It's freedom also, because it's... people have the ability to have them in a household as long as they have license.
Right. And then you have
because America is so, like, free, people... Because America is so free, it's possible for us to bear arms and things like that so we can protect ourselves from different crimes and everything.
Another thing, I don't know about other countries, but in the U.S., some people really enjoy hunting. So you hunt with a gun. Some people hunt with a gun. Like, that's a pretty huge... I used to work in the automotive industry, and what holiday was it? Was it Voting Day?
Veterans Day.
They would float when Veterans Day was celebrated because it was a day off, and they would make it for opening day. So that was a pretty big... culture, at least in the automotive industry.
Fun facts, we also have the most of.
Go back to that. There's one thing on there that was kind of interesting. More people here are armed than in Yemen. And the proportion of Americans who own guns is going down, but the number of guns is going up. So, a lot going on there. And number 10, Kyle?
How can I learn American slang?
Okay, don't judge for this answer, but Urban Dictionary really does, but really, I mean, they have some weird stuff on there, but they are useful stuff. If you look up slang words just into Google, it'll bring up Urban Dictionary. So if it is your first time in America, Urban Dictionary, as it's called, otherwise watch, you know, if you want, like, more inappropriate slang, look at MTV, but just listen to other Americans. Just be really, just, like, keep your ears open all the time. And you don't have to forcefully mimic us because we can sound pretty stupid sometimes. But but just keep your ears open, you know.
I think the best way to learn American slang is to communicate with the native speakers and write and speak. Another way, that is to watch the soap opera. Like Desperate Housewife and such kind of comic, such kind of films, movies. Yeah, that's the best way to pick it up instead of learning it from the dictionary. I think that is the dead language. Yeah. Okay, that's it.
And then you had something to say.
I don't feel that you can. You can learn and understand American slang, but like, it wouldn't be comfortable. I don't feel like it would be comfortable if you haven't already started from the roots on that. Like,
we had a friend. Sorry, we had a friend who was from Europe, and I think they took slang. In my opinion, they like kind of took it too far because they were swearing, like using the F word out in public, where, at least for me, I try not to use that kind of language if kids are around. And my kids, anybody like, you know, who can't drive, I'm not going to be saying F this and F that. And they would say it like loudly. And I think it was just they didn't realize maybe like the weight of that word. So if you're learning slang, keep in mind slang versus swear words and just, you know, maybe be mindful of swear words out in public.
And then just something for fun, does anybody not know what one of these means? Yeah.
I don't know what a hot mess is.
What is a hot mess? Anyone want to explain hot mess?
Sure.
So hot mess is like, it's kind of a compliment, but not really. it's like you're dressed up, but you're a total mess. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's just
like the struggle is real.
Yeah, the struggle. It's a struggle.
Let's try some more.
Okay, the majority of my experience, a hot mess means you usually look terrible, something you're doing is terrible, you're ratchet, you're out of control, and people don't want to be seen in public with you.
I just want to reiterate, because my definition of hot mess is totally different. It does represent something that is foul or just terrible in general. If you're wearing leg warmers in the summertime, you look a hot mess. And and that is just a general example of how to use it in a sentence. If you're trying to adapt to slang, it definitely does represent something that is out of order, so to speak.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I guess like a simple example might be like after going to the gym and before I have to go to class and like 20 minutes later, I am a really big hot mess because like my hair is everywhere. I'm like trying to like not be gross and like actually get to class on time. So I'm just like stumbling around all over campus and it's just, it's a hot mess. Like,
did that help?
You don't want to go out with them. Is there another one up there that needs to be explained?
Yeah.
I don't know, a rock thing.
Hey, you're rocking that scarf.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
Well.
Who said that? That was good.
Are there any other ones up here that no one, or someone's not familiar with?
I didn't know, like, this is my jam. I was like, what? What is that? This is my jam.
It's like when a song comes on the radio and you really like it, you're like, this one jam. And you, like, dance a little.
That's it for this one?
That's kind of, that means kind of like Ruby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Okay. We want to quickly break into little groups. All those questions came from 100 questions and answers about Americans. We want to break into little groups because we're going to have you on your own in your little groups answer quickly, and then we're going to ask for your answers 10 questions that come from the guide about East Asians. East Asian cultures, to make that work, if you're from East Asia, join a group that needs you, because there are people here who have questions, and you might be the only one who can answer those questions. So, we have these, we're going to get one of these, could you guys help them group up? You can sit in if you want to give everybody some questions.
Are you
going to taste it? Feel
free to move your chairs. You guys want to be a group? I mean, all that really matters is how it tastes.
It'll probably do to about 8:15. 8:15? Okay. Yeah. But we don't want them to, like, answer.
Sure. Is this on? Hey, everybody. We're going to bring you back to the front.
We need a third of me.
Now, hoping you guys all got some good answers. Are we, like, talking about anything before?
Okay, don't go away, Leah. You have the voice. Here's how this part works. Leah is going to call out for answers. We're going to show them, like, the questions like this. Ah, okay. And if your group has a good answer, raise your hand, and we will call on different groups to answer these different questions. We will see if they make sense. Oh, just a minute. And then in your groups, keep an honest score, and we have prizes, and you know what we mean by prizes. We have prizes for the top score. So we're going to do this part fast. We're going to take one answer on each question. If it's the right one, we'll say yes. If it's not, we'll get another one. And so score your group. At the end, we'll ask how many out of 10 your group's got. And we'll see who has the winning group. Okay, Leah, take it.
Okay. So the first question on your paper says, is Hong Kong part of China? On the screen it says, how is Hong Kong part of China? So Joe, which one is it?
The one on the sheet.
So.
I was pointing
five. Okay, now the person from the country of China, I think I'm entitled to answer this question. Now, in 1997, the Chinese government has taken over the sovereignty from Great Britain. So, politically speaking, that's true. Hong Kong is part of China. But we know that because of the historic reason, Hong Kong returned to China sovereignty in politics, but owing to the history, now there is a special arrangement that is what we call one country, two system. That is to say, Hong Kong can't have their military forces. So security and diplomacy is under the central government, the Chinese government. But we have set aside something for Hongkongese. That is, Hongkongese can administrate the daily life of the usual things by themselves. So that is what we mean, one country, two system. Yeah, that's my answer. Okay, thank you.
I think you gave us a much more intense answer than I was expecting. Wait, do you have the answers, Joe?
The answers are on the honor system. You heard what he said. If your group was right, put down yes.
If you have one of the guides from the East Asian cultures, you'll be able to find the answer. I guess if you want that one as a prize,
here we go.
Ariel will give it out to you.
Well, we'll do that at the end. We'll swear.
But second question, what does it mean to save face or lose face? Go. That was the first hand.
We learned that it basically just means to respect yourself.
Okay. Do you have the same answer or... We have a different answer? Okay.
Okay, possibly for the most of Chinese, face is a typical thing. We can't save face if we actually get the deserved respect from others. Or sometimes we may lose face if we show our privacy in public, or we fail to get the deserved things from others, or just lead to the result of losing face. To save face is actually is the different ways or endeavors to get ourselves, be proud of ourselves or just achieve what I'm supposed to do. For example, a lot of Chinese people tend to teach the children to not do something in public or just prohibit them from behave badly or something because they just worry their children's bad behavior may lose their face.
Excellent answer.
Yeah, okay, that's our understanding. Thank you.
We have over here too.
We are a little group, so we audition for this respect for ourselves. Save face sometimes may mean that you couldn't or you shouldn't do the things that are shame. Yeah. So just to keep yourself look good and you save your face. Save your face. If you we say that you lose your face, maybe you do some things that it, that is not good, and you feel it's shame. We don't want shame.
We had that to basically lose your face is to be embarrassed or feel embarrassed about something.
Now, save face means that you have respect for one's dignity, or you have take into consideration of how others' emotion is. And lose face means that something you said or done which embarrass your friends or your somebody, and make them feel shameful, or maybe you hurt their dignity. Yeah, that's kind of something. It's a very important part of most Asians' culture. Yeah, so this is what I want to say about a face culture. Yeah, okay, that's it.
I think those were all great answers. But question three is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but what is Hallyu or the Korean wave?
So we learned that
Hallyu, if I'm saying that correctly, means like the fashion from Korea, or like the, yeah, fashion in Korea.
Does anyone else have a different answer for that one, or the back?
Hallyu typically corresponds to the Korean wave of pop culture going outside of South Korea, particularly to East Asian culture in East Asia and South Asian countries, but now it's going to like Europe and even America, if you know of like K-pop dramas that are on TV all the time. Or K-pop groups, which are getting really big in the U.S., and the dancing, and kind of the style of all of that.
You have someone else? Anyone else want to answer that? Yeah, pop. Does East Asia have a dominant culture? Anyone find an answer for that one?
If there is a dominant culture in East Asia, I can say that is Confucianism. Yeah, that's it.
And then that's what we found too in the guide, that Confucianism is widespread, but language, religion, customs, holidays can vary quite a bit across East Asia, but Confucianism was pretty widespread. That's an excellent answer.
Now I'm not sure if our answer is correct, but for number four, we learned that Han is a typical culture, typical dominant culture during the Han Dynasty. And if you want more of an in-depth explanation of what the Han Dynasty is, then we have someone that can inform you.
I would question whether that's also dominant in Korea and Japan. That's where I am. Help? Do you have a...
East Asia, I mean that I'm Chinese, so I just to say something, the language and their culture about men culture. Because that in China, most people use dominant, and they speak dominant, Mandarin. They speak Mandarin, and this is their language. And most people live in the east or the center of China. Only a few people live in the west, in the west. So there have the most people. And the culture is just like that girl said. The Han ethic is have most people. So they have the... culture as, but different minority have different culture. We Han respect the different culture. So this is a culture and the people and the language and the celebration. Some holidays. The most holidays in China, maybe the government put this. This is national holiday, and for the ethnic, they have their special holiday. Yeah, they have, and maybe they can invite the Han people to get to their house or their groups. We can. Just we are friends.
Yeah, I think one thing we've noticed between all the guides is we have a huge stereotype, just like Asia, but within Asia, there's so many different countries, and every country has its own identifying culture, and so that's why sometimes it might not be the best to group people together, because there are little special characteristics about each and every one that makes them unique. So number five, I think it's my favorite question. What is Hello Kitty and Kauai? Go over here first. Hands are up.
So Hello Kitty is basically this cat. And
she's not a cat.
Oh, she's not?
No, she's a girl.
That.
Yeah. Oh, it was released earlier this year.
And then kawaii means cute.
Yeah, no,
I don't need Hello Kitties.
I don't know if anyone heard that, but Hello Kitty is a girl, but it's kind of like SpongeBob. We were kind of talking about like SpongeBob is actually a man, not a sponge. And so Hello Kitty is actually a girl, not a cat.
A girl cat?
I'm just trying to figure out like an American show that kind of.
So how is Hello Kitty?
Yeah. A lot of discussion on that one. Question six is, does knowing one East Asian language make it easier to learn another?
Does anyone have a microphone?
Dozo yoroshiku onegaishimasu. It's a means. Nice to meet you. So I think this is easier.
Do you? Well, I guess the question would be: do you think it's easier for you to learn Japanese or Korean since you know,
yeah,
Mandarin?
Because we are the neighbor of them.
Anyone else?
We disagree.
Okay.
Actually, they're totally different. You know, just one typical example. The Chinese has totally different grammatical patterns from Japanese. We use the subject, verb, object, just like English. But for Japanese, actually, it's subject, object, and verb. So typical sentence add, and pronunciation is totally different. Just one typical example. It's not so easy for you to learn another one.
We've got a debate going on over here.
They say the magazine in Japanese. They say just like, similar like the magazine. Yeah, like, they are like. This like the bag. We in Chinese we say shoe bao. In Japanese they say coupon. Looks the same, just the same. And they learn some word from China. They learn some words from China.
Over here.
I just kind of have a question off of that. How is that, or how is Chinese and Japanese similar or different compared to like American and like British? Like, you know, proper English compared to American. Is that like. Similar, or is it like a similar difference? And you know, or
I think it'd be more similar to like Spanish and Portuguese, so they're still two different languages, and English and English is still the same language. So I think it's more like Spanish and Portuguese because a lot of their stuff is really similar with the Romance languages.
In terms of the East Asian languages, I don't speak any of them, so I can't speak from experience, but hearing from this, I think we have two different ideas. some East Asians seem to speak loudly and some seem quiet. Why is that? Over here?
Well, they told us that it was because of the personality of the person.
Yeah, just to expand on that, just like in, you know, in America, some people are quiet and some people are outgoing. Some people speak loudly, some people speak quietly. So, yeah. Can assume it's the same in other cultures as well.
Anyone else? What are manga and anime?
I think, well, they're both cartoons, but I think Magna is, like, printed cartoons, and anime is, like, TV shows, cartoons.
I think that one's correct.
Where is that from, Magna and anime?
Japan.
Korea?
I think it's Japanese.
An interesting thing about that. Inspiration for that was Disney. So it goes around, changes, comes back. That's it.
Question 9, is Asian food spicier than American food?
I think
food?
We have one more comment before we move on. Sorry.
I was just going to say that, any of the Americans in here know the show Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah.
So I've learned how to say it in Japanese. Chinese, sorry. Dongba? Dongba? I'm sorry. And also, the Kamehameha wave is a move. Is like a anime move. It's a Hawaiian word based off of a chief who brought the island together.
Yeah, brought the island chain together.
So I learned that today about anime.
Does anyone have an answer to this question? Gonna go. I will win here.
We learned that it's similar to how some foods are in the United States. Like, it varies based on region. So she said, like, Southern Asia typically likes spicier food than Central Asia, for example.
Like that answer? Question 10. Last question. Do Asian parents control their children's lives? Oh, sorry. Oh, okay. This one, I guess. Okay, go right there.
Yes.
You are not Asian parents, and you are not Asian girls. So I think maybe I'm an Asian girl, so I know my parents control me or not. I think maybe not, because, you know, in undergraduate, I learned the economic, and in my graduate students, I learned special education. This is my choice. And my parents didn't support me because they think that in Chinese conditional view or something, they don't like the people. Even the people, they have some problem, they don't want to learn the special education. Yeah, they have some stereotype or something. But they don't control our life. This is your life. You learn, you earn your money, and you choose your way. It's up to you. It's not our business. Yeah, they enjoy their life.
Go back here.
They said that the parents do control the lives.
But I guess it does depend. Like, of course, not all parents are going to control their kids' lives, and not, yeah, it just depends.
And back.
Okay, I'm a Chinese parent, so I have some right to say it. Yeah, I have the floor to say it. Usually, generally speaking, most Asian, especially Chinese parents, have such tendency to control our children's life. Yeah, that's true. That's the one part of the heritage. Yeah, also a part of culture. You know that Chinese culture attach great importance to family. Yeah, for two matures, they have come together to make up a family. So after the marriage, the most important thing is to give birth. So children had become the focus of parents, and not only the focus of the parents, but also the focus for other family members. For example, grandparents. Yeah, grandparents, you know. Yeah. So just as that girl says, with the processing, with the development of the society, especially the reform and opening up, China has is undergoing great changes. So for those children who was born in 1990s or in the age of 1980s, now, their parents are becoming more and more liberal, so they leave greater space, more and more space for children to develop their own interest or to make their own choice. But it doesn't mean that parents didn't exert great influence upon them. For example, as for education, parents still give great attention to it. Otherwise, how can so many Chinese students come to the United States to further their study? We can't imagine, because they can't support themselves economically. It's their parents. Yeah, you can imagine it. Yeah, that's it.
I think the life contains education. Education is not a whole life. So I want to ask a question about Asian parents. Do you marry the girl or the lady? Is your parents' choice or your own choice? Yeah, when you grow up, this is your choice. I think most of them, this is them choice, not their parents' choice. But in the past, maybe this is their parents to choose a lady. You marry her, so you marry.
It does sound like so many of these answers. There's not one right answer. Things are changing. It depends on the individual. It depends on the family. It depends not just on the country, but on the part of the country. I love so many of the answers. Just a word on this last one. This question was asked by some American students here at Michigan State, and the answer that came back was, the story with Asian families is they have worked hard and made a lot of sacrifices to make things possible. So this is a collaborative decision in which the son or daughter really wants to make good on this big investment of being here at Michigan State and in the United States. So the conflict isn't always there. Sometimes there's a deep agreement and an obligation to the family for doing this. So we've been listening to the answers and trying to figure out how to score this. And we think there's only one way we can score this, and that is happening right now. If you don't already have a book, now you get one. Everybody goes home a winner, which is how we like to do things. Let me ask my friends, we're wrapping up.
We have some time.
We have a little bit of time. Here's what we'd like to do. We're going to have a guide out in November about Muslim Americans. We're going to start a new guide in January. We've already begun work on it with some of our allies about Jewish Americans. If you have questions that you think should be included in that guide, we'd like to hear what those are. We'll take those and we'll work on them starting with a new class in January. Here's my commercial. This class is called the Journalism 492. It's a one-credit class. I think it's easy to get into. I don't think there are any prerequisites on it. It meets at 9 o'clock Monday morning starting in January. And next year, we're definitely doing Jewish Americans starting in January. I think we'll be doing African Americans next year. Other subjects that have been proposed are veterans and people with autism, and we'd like to do another religion guide. So we'll see how that all shapes out. That's a lot to do. But we, at this point, would like to thank you if you have to leave. If you would like to stay and help us figure out what to ask in a Jewish guide, we'd appreciate that. And I'd ask you for the library that works so hard on this to fill out the form that was put on your chair with a pen. And leave that. Where do we leave those forms?
With me.
Right there. So thank you for going through our quizzes. If you, yes? Here's an announcement. Announcement.
Please don't go stay for 30 more seconds. My name is Ruth Ann Jones. I'm one of the librarians here, and among my various duties, I coordinate the library's publishing program. I wanted to use this occasion with student writers here tonight who've contributed to these books to share with you that one of the library's other 6050 projects is a student anthology on civil and human rights, which was published today. The authors are 5 MSU students. 4 of them are undergraduates. I have a couple of copies to sell if anybody is dying to read this. I just wanted to share that and offer my congratulations if any of the student authors are here tonight. So thank you very much for contributing to Project 6050.